The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
But first, today is the first day back at university for third level students, be they in university or other higher education colleges. And for many, the past few weeks will have been very stressful in the run up, looking for accommodation. And for some who remain at this point without accommodation, that they are facing into long commutes. The Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless, is with me in studio. Minister, good morning.
Good morning to you, Pat.
Now, it's a great day for people going to college for the very first time. Very exciting, except if they're effectively homeless.
Yeah, so look, first of all, I do want to wish everyone well in the new academic year, students and teachers, academics alike. And 80% of students did get their top three course choices through the CEO this year. So I want to congratulate those and wish well to all, including those who are exploring all sorts of different options. But in terms of the, I suppose, the student experience, I firmly believe that to participate fully in college, it's not necessarily just about the courses that you take. I believe in a broad education, taking courses outside of your own discipline and participating in college life. And that's made much more difficult if you have a long commute to get to your university or your place of study. And it impedes you living college life to the full, including all that sort of development and wider participation. So we have, in terms of the beds available in the system, we're always trying to increase that number. How many student accommodation offerings are there? With two children going to college very recently myself and having been through it, albeit some years ago myself as well, I know all too well the struggle of getting accommodation. And
okay, but
commuting.
You're in government. You're not like any other parent who's not in government.
Yep.
You can actually do something about it.
Yep. So what we have right now today, we have 50,000, just under 50,000 available beds through purpose-built student accommodation. We also have 15,000 further beds with planning permission going through the process. Today, after I leave you here in studio, I will be going to Maynooth University, where I will be cutting the ribbon and opening 116 new beds going live today for the first time. Last Wednesday, I approved 67 million to build 493 new beds in UCD. I'm hoping to turn the side on that in the next week or two. So we are delivering. We had an additional 100 million put into the system. So I've spent some of that in UCD and Maynooth and other colleges.
Okay,
at the hands up as well.
Do the math, as they say. Mm. You've got 50,000 beds in the system, which are college provided beds. 15,000 coming, and that would include the ones you're opening today and so on and so forth. What is the total cohort that is looking for a bed?
Yeah,
because,
so,
I mean, that's the math you've got to do.
Look, that's a really good question. And I'll be meeting with the students' unions, actually 15 of them, over the next 3 days. I'm doing that at the start of the new academic year. I'm also meeting Vincent DePaul. I'm also meeting, a number of, I suppose, advocacy organisations to speak to them directly and see what their experiences are. But to go back to the numbers, there's about 140,000 students in the system.
Now, some of those will be living at home. I mean, if you
exactly.
live close to a university, you'd be mad to spend the money on accommodation just to get independence from your parents, and they would be the ones funding it, and they won't spend it if it's convenient to go to college. So of the people, the 140,000, how many of them actually need accommodation?
So
that student experience.
So I don't have the exact figure, but that's one of the reasons I'm engaging with 15 different student unions this week and other representative bodies. But we've 50,000 beds in the system, another 15,000 on the way, that's 65,000. We also have 5,500 digs beds available now. That brings up over 70,000. So that's 50% of all students have a bed for them, if we look at it that way. And that's not counting the traditional private sector that I would have lived in, and maybe you lived in back in the day, where we all rented a house, from different landlords and different private estates. Now, that's not necessarily optimal, but it is a large part of the student accommodation provision at the moment. What I want to move to, and just in June of this year, I published a new student design strategy, accommodation design. So to give a blueprint to the contractors, to the architects, to the builders, to say, if you're building student accommodation, here's the template that you work to. Because up until now, they're all doing their own thing. Everyone's going in, with the new design, a new approach. Different county councils are giving different permissions. And I said, here's a standardised design.
Okay, what's changing from what to what?
So, for example,
you want more units.
Yeah, the primary thing is more units per square metre, or per square metreage. More shared spaces, things like lounge areas, shared kitchen areas, basic things like laundry areas and access points. And in some of the designs were suboptimal in the sense that they didn't make the most use of space. There's also a social side to this that not only does it mean that students, that we could get more beds into each building, but actually students anecdotally were going into their rooms, living in sort of one-bed apartments, essentially, closing the door, going on their phone for a night, and not making those connections socially, culturally, you know, that was part of college life. So more of a shared living experience. Of course, students have their own room, etc., and their own bed, and all the sort of private sanctuary that they need.
Well, they have their own bathroom. Is everything en suite?
There are different options. So one model would be that two students would share a bathroom. You could have two students, a bathroom between two rooms, maybe between three rooms. But I suppose choice is the primary overriding factor.
You said you were laying down a template, so yep. Everyone would be offering a similar level of accommodation.
So there's sort of, you know, a couple of different options within that. But does every student actually need their own ensuite bathroom and kitchenette, a mini apartment? I would think no. I think that might be the gold standard, but I think if people really wanted to get that, but I think, let's be honest, if we share kitchens, if we share lounge areas, if we share laundry rooms, we can get an extra number of beds into every building, which ultimately provides more supply. And certainly when I was in college, I'm not saying it's ideal at all, but I shared with three others. It was four of us in a room at one stage in one of the flats I was in. Not the ideal by any means, but historically students have shared together and have gone into shared spaces. But I think part of the college experience is actually having that shared lounge area, having a place to meet students from other disciplines, from other courses, from other walks of life, having those shared communal areas. I think it just makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, but that business of being locked in your room, locked onto a screen of some kind. Mm. I mean, I'm not suggesting that en suites are not the gold standard, as you put it. But if you have to share a large communal bathroom and showers and so on, you definitely will meet people. There's no question.
No, for sure. Yeah, no, for sure. But I think certainly in the lounge areas, you know, sort of shared areas for cooking, preparing meals, shared areas for lounge and to watch TV or to just get around a chessboard or chat or whatever. But in terms of the rooms, you know, we're looking at maybe 2 to 3 beds per bathroom. In some cases, it won't be a large, like I'm not talking about dormitory with a rake of dozens of showers. I'm talking about maybe small units, a couple of units clustering together around maybe a shared bathroom, shared kitchenette. So, you know, it's not going to the other extreme either.
But I can anticipate the rows. You left that bathroom in a terrible mess.
And I had all those in my student days as well. And like, I know things have moved on and I know it's not easy.
Okay, but here's the rub. When I finished in DCU 10 years ago, the private student accommodation I stayed in was 4,500 for the academic year. Now it's 9,500 for the academic year. And have we had more than double inflation in those 10 years? In other words, are the people providing this accommodation creaming it? And they'll cream it even more if you cram more units into the same site availability.
So, look, I suppose we do have to attract investment into the system because the units are not going to build themselves, and albeit the state will fund many of them. And as I spent $67 million alone on UCD this week, and 116 beds being delivered a minute this afternoon, another $20 million. And I will continue to invest. And in the National Development Plan, being the capital envelope, I secured €4.5 billion, and a large chunk of that will be going towards student supports in different ways, including student accommodation. So the state will step up and the state will play a large role. But we are a mixed economy, and we do want to attract interest, and we do want to attract investment. And I think that if the private sector can be incentivized to develop and deliver student accommodation at scale in a way where the rent is reasonable and proportionate to the
students. How do you control that?
So one way you could do it is through a nomination agreement. This is a system whereby a private contractor builds for a college, not for an individual student, builds for a college a block of student apartments, and then the college contracts with them to provide them onto their students. So that's the way you sort of outsource the construction and build, but the actual management and day-to-day is managed through the
college. Years ago, the very first student accommodation built on UCD was built by a consortium, I think involving Cement Roadstone. And the idea was they kept that accommodation, they rented it for profit for a number of years, and then at the end of maybe 20 years, they handed it back to the college in pristine condition. Mm. So the college then owned the accommodation, which was built on their land by that consortium at the time. Yeah. I mean, that's a model that recommends itself because ultimately the college would own the real estate.
Yeah. And look, that's one of the ways we've gone, for example, with capital buildings, things like lecture halls, science labs, technology rooms. I spent $400 million plus just earlier this year in terms of a new public-private partnership where we're rolling out new college buildings, not accommodation, but things like labs, libraries, and I've already committed to that. And the way we're doing that is exactly that model. After 25 years, the contractor maintains it. Every bulb that's changed, every screw that comes loose, 25 years, and then the state gets it at the end. We may well go down that route for student accommodation. At the moment, I'm working on a student accommodation guide, a new strategy. I've been working on this since I took up office at the start of this year. And I very much intend to publish that this year because we need to get that out there. And we need to provide certainty to students, to families, but also to everybody in the system so that if you are a contractor or developer and you're thinking, well, will I build private sector accommodation or will I build student accommodation? Or, and let's be honest, these are big global funds, will I skip Ireland to go to Canada or go to UK or go to France instead? Because these are highly mobile vehicles and I think we really need to say to Ireland, whatever the system is, we need to communicate
the rules. Look, if they can make money, the state can make money. You've got loads and loads of money at the moment looking for a home. Why can you not make the money that these big international funds would make? I've never understood this. If you've got the cash and it is a profitable venture, do it yourselves. Mm. That's what governments should be doing.
Yeah, it may not be as profitable as people think.
Look, they're not going to come in if it's not as profitable.
Exactly.
It's either one thing or the other.
There needs to be a degree of certainty about a return. At the moment, there's been a lot of moving parts, so I think we need to slow that down.
If it's good for them, it should be good for the Irish state.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
There's a risk-reward element as well, and there's capital injections up front. So I'm not ideological about it. I don't have any fundamental belief that we must do it one way or the other. I'm open to what matters is what works, what can deliver the maximum number of beds for students at a reasonable price in the quickest time frame.
Some of the texts coming in from a Kerry listener. A four-bedroomed house in Tralee, County Kerry, is charging €1,000 per month per room. On what planet is a four-bedroomed house in Tralee worth €4,000 a month? When I was in college in the early 2000s, it was about 30 punts a week for a room. I know things have moved on, but it's extortionate what is going on there. Another one suggests a different template. I was at Edinburgh University in 1999. For a year, student accommodation was a 10-bedroom apartment, 3 shared bathrooms, big shared kitchen, dining and lounge area. It was the best fun and we made great friends. Cannot understand why it has taken so long to do it in Ireland. Another one, car parking. The new plan for 640 beds across the road from DCU. No car parking adjacent to an industrial complex. So therefore, it is simply not going to happen. And there's loads more on that about, you know, hundreds, maybe thousands of temporary beds could be built on the car parks in UCD, DCU, TUD, etc. Unfortunately, the staff unions wouldn't allow it. So a lot of people are exercised about the sort of airy-fairy nature of the plans when there are practical things that could be done.
Yeah.
Temporary accommodation, yeah, built quickly, will last for, I suppose, 20 years until the accommodation crisis is over.
Yeah. Yeah, so a couple of things there. So, look, I totally agree. I want to move quickly and I want to get things done. I'm only in the department 6-7 months, but I'm doing my best to move things on as quickly. So your texter from Edinburgh, I absolutely agree. And that's exactly the model that I've rolled out in my first 6 months in the job. The student design template, shared kitchens, shared laundry rooms, you know, shared lounges, and a couple of students sharing together in mini apartments. It makes perfect sense. That's exactly what I'm trying to do. In terms of the car parking, I think there's two sides to that. One of my own kids drove to college because the commute was so long. I've been train, a hop, skip and a jump, a train, a bus and a Lewis. And it can be very complicated. And I get that many students have no choice but to drive. However, we are constantly trying to improve public transport. And I'm somebody who got into politics as a public transport campaigner. I was a long-suffering commuter on the Sannans platform coming on the Arrow into Dublin every day for many, many years. It's partly why I got into politics to improve the service. And I firmly believe that things like the Dart Plus, like the Lewis extensions, like the Bus Connects are ultimately the answer. So somewhere like DCU, it's in the heart of the North City Centre. It's well served by public transport. I'm not convinced that building a massive car park there is the best use of space when we could put that space to use, for example, for more student accommodation, our library buildings, our labs, and use the buses and the Lewis's to get in and out, or indeed the Metro, which is on the way, which will be serving that area too. So I suppose just to push back a little bit on that one, I don't think car parking is the answer to all our ills, and actually I think we should be moving on
from the question of car parks that are there, building on them, temporary accommodation. What do you say to that idea?
Well, look, I don't know the specifics of that particular situation, but my view, my strong view is that really, certainly in the city centre, we should be moving to a public transport model, and available land should be used for other more helpful purposes.
Now, the question of temporary accommodation, there's a story today about Threshold having reservations about the cabin in the back garden kind of thing, which a lot of people would see as a solution to the student accommodation problem. They've got adult children who have really no business anymore living in the family home, and they at least get privacy in the cabin in the back garden. Mm. But Threshold are saying this will, you know, no, if that's rented to a student, for example, no protection under the tenancies laws, basically.
Yeah, so that, look, I hear what Threshold is saying, and I saw the article. Look, again, there's a balance. I think it's very reasonable, and I think people, really scratch their heads and get frustrated when they have adult children or maybe an older relative or maybe they themselves in a family home, perhaps with a large garden in the suburbs or out somewhere like my way in North Kildare or in the Greater Dublin area or indeed anywhere in the country. And they're saying, well, actually, you know, there's a space out there. They're served as a family member wants to use it. Could we not? In fact, some people vote with their feet and they do it and they construct a cabin or a home. And then the council come after them and start saying it's unauthorised development and you're in breach of the planning laws. We're going to take you to court. And people often come to people like me in my clinics and say, why am I being sued by the council for putting up my own accommodation on my own family land in the back garden? And I get you can't have people building anything anywhere. But I think there is a balance. And I think that that's why the government are moving to be more flexible about those situations. The thinking so far is that it will be limited to a family member. We don't want to have sort of back garden slum conditions, you know, where anybody can just rent out a shed. You kind of think there has to be some minimum standard and there has to be also
and who's going to be checking a connection. Up on all of that?
Well, the same people that are already bringing them to court for building them in the first place.
Look, you know, there are people who complain to local authorities about breaches by their neighbours when they build unauthorised developments.
Yes.
And I can tell you, nothing happens.
Yeah.
Nothing happens.
Indeed. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it does. Sometimes the more egregious ones are ignored and what we might consider more trivial breaches are actually prosecuted. I think sometimes they can lack consistency. But I think that there is a balance here and the privacy does have to be respected. But the threshold argument, look, I think the organisations like Threshold and other advocacy groups will engage with Minister Brown in developing the regulations. But I think personally it's sensible if we have a back garden and a family member is looking for extra space, whether they're a student, whether they're a worker, whether it's the granny, whoever it is, if it's safe, if it's secure, if it's comfortable and affordable, to me that's at least a temporary model. And it's been embraced elsewhere, North America, Canada, very often use those models.
A lot of people are exercised by this. I've had to pay my brother's college accommodation up front, close to $6,500. I rent myself at a rate of above €600 per month in Cork City. Our accommodation systems are broken. I have to survive on porridge, noodles and cheap apple juice for months to cover this cost. I live in poverty just to have a leaking roof over my head. Another one. Don't you love ministers that say, I spent X? Don't mention the taxpayer. It's the taxpayer's X. They're very slow to claim that it's their work when things go wrong. From Olive in Kildare. Public transport, that's a joke. My son left work at Blanchardstown at 5 p.m, got home at 8 p.m. to Bray. Two buses simply didn't turn up, which happens all the time. I'm a Kerry parent with a student in Cork. What makes me angry is how grateful I'm supposed to feel about paying €10,000 per academic year for a single room. You feel grateful because the alternative is for students to sleep in their car. My nephew has to do that in Galway. Disgraceful politicians with nobody making any difference at all.
Yeah, so I hope the 116 beds that I open a minute this afternoon will make a difference in the 493 that I approved. And your text is right. Of course, it's not my money. It's public money. I'm very, very conscious of that all the time. It's why I've been accused at times of being, you know, I'm not splashing it around like confetti. We have to be mindful that it is taxpayers' money. We need to get value for money. We need to spend it wisely. The text around the Blanchardstown to Bray, I agree. That's a hell of a commute. You're getting one bus from the Dublin West into the city centre, another one down to Bray, maybe got next to a Dart. In my view, the Circle Line, the Metro project, if that had been built, we wouldn't have this problem. And I'm a big believer. That's why I keep saying we need to build infrastructure. That's why I'm a big supporter of the Metro. That's why I'm a big supporter of the Dart Plus extensions. That texter coming from Lancaster Bray will have options when that infrastructure is put in place. It's a pity it wasn't in place 20 years ago, but the second best time to do it is today. We're doing it through the National Development Plan. And your texter surviving on noodles, I'm always alarmed to hear stories of that. Somebody who, a student who is living on noodles and sort of trying to make ends meet. That's why I'm meeting 15 student seniors in the next couple of days and Vincent DePaul and other advocacy agencies. I will say that every household up to €115,000 income now gets at least some form of a grant, full or partial, as well as contribution to their fees, are indeed paid in full in many cases. So if someone is over €115,000, at the moment, that's the only scenario where they're not getting support. So I suppose one of the things I want to dig into, and I heard a lot of hard cases raised to me over the last number of months, I've invited all those hard cases, be it raised by opposition politicians or others, to say, bring the details to me. Let me see what the system's breaking down, because I'm seeing hundreds of millions spent every year and we'll be looking to increase that in the new budget. And yet some people are saying to me they're living on noodles. Mm. So what's breaking down? If we're paying out hundreds of millions in grants and in student supports and fee contributions, and people are still in that situation, there's something not working somewhere, and I want to find out what that is so that I can so I can address that in the budget.
Why do ministers always state the obvious as if they had nothing to do with it? And why does the government always wait for the general public to support them with rental room schemes? Just start building and change the planning process so that not every Tom, Dick and Harry can block so many bills. How many student accommodation bills have been blocked by protest of one kind or another?
So one of the schemes in UCD has been objected to, and that will hold it up, unfortunately. But there are other schemes in progress. But we are very much tackling that through the planning process. So the new Planning Act that was passed into law just before the last election by the current and last government gets rid of a lot of those judicial reviews. And there is a right for people to be heard, and we do have obligations, etc. And it is in a fair society. We can't just steamroll things. But for example, in the past, if a judicial review found that the process was somewhat technically flawed, but the overall result would not have changed, in the past, they would have been reset, had to start again. Now what we say is if it doesn't materially affect the outcome, set it aside, it can keep going regardless. If there was an I not crossed properly, a T not crossed somewhere,
we shall see how this new planning thing works out. A couple more before we conclude. We have two in university. That's 2,000 extra in fees this year as it goes back up to 300. The rent tax credit being abolished at the end of 2025, that's another 2,000 gone. Accommodation up about 10% since they started, another 1,500. Add in the cost of food, drink increasing, that's probably an extra 1,000. So I estimate it could cost me an extra 6K this year on top of the 17K a year it cost me before. And the parties in this government in their election manifesto promised to abolish fees.
Well, sir, first of all, that's not correct. Fianna Fáil never promised to abolish fees at all. So that gets thrown around, but it's not the case. And if you look at the programme for government, it doesn't commit to doing that either. What the programme for government, which is a compromise between the different parties making up the government, commits to do is to reduce the student contribution fee in a sustainable way over the lifetime of the government. And that's exactly what I'm working to do. The fee for next year hasn't been set yet. I haven't actually had a chance to pass a budget yet because the budget that is guiding this September and fees this year is the one that came into effect last October before I was in the ministry. My budget will be done this October, and I have a number of different proposals I'm exploring with the Department of Public Expenditure, and I hope to bring more supports to more students in that. Just on the rent credit, I think your text might be wrong about that. It's actually increased from 750 to 1,000. So the second it's being abolished, it's actually being increased, unless, again, there's some mismatch there. And again, if there is, the text is welcome to get in touch with me privately.
The last point is about the increase in CAO points. Does it come from an increase in the number of applications? Where are they coming from? Are they living in Ireland or coming from Europe looking for a degree through English? I heard that the kids who used to go to the UK are now coming to Ireland as the UK is no longer in Europe, and therefore European kids don't qualify for free fees in the UK. Is it the conversion rate of the Leaving Cert system? It's been recalibrated. I heard they were recalibrated in favour of European and UK systems, meaning that the Europeans and the UK students get more Leaving Cert points this year compared to prior years, hence the rise in points.
No, not really.
So they recalibrate, though.
Yeah, so I can address that. I think there's a technical issue there. So there has been, I think people are aware, there was great inflation during COVID. That's been gradually rewound, very gradually, from 6% to 5% this year and, you know, over the next couple of years. Some countries have already gone back to baseline. What the texter may be referring to, so traditionally, there's been a lot of students from the north have come south and vice versa. That's really fallen away in recent years. Certainly when I was in Trinity 20-odd years ago, there was a lot of northern students on the campus. It was part of the tradition. The reason they're not coming down, if you do three A-levels in the north...
Okay, was it recalibrated?
There was a small concession to those students from the north applying to colleges in the south to sit in a fourth subject and get bonus points for that.
So that's
put them on a par with the students from the south. I think in the context of an All-Ireland dimension, I think it's important we would enable that.
And the European points were recalibrated as well.
I'm not sure about the European points. That I'd have to double-check that one, but certainly on the northern points, and for good reason. But that should not be in any way material to the outcome. We're talking about a couple of hundred in the context of 90,000 CO applicants, so it's not statistically significant at all.
Minister for Further and Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science, James Lawless. Minister, thank you very much for joining us.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.